If you've ever felt too sensitive, too emotional, wondered why your brain seems to run a little spicier than everyone else's, welcome. The Sensitivity Doctor podcast is where we laugh, learn, and get radically honest about what it means to live in a world that's not always exactly designed for sensitive or neurodivergent minds. Every week, we dive into real conversations with authors, advocates, researchers, and folks who are rewriting the rules on sensitivity, burnout. Hosted by Dr. Amelia Kelly, author, therapist, TED speaker, and champion of all things sensitivity, come get curious with us.
Welcome to Wisdom Talk Radio, a collaborative community of explorers in conscious living.
Welcome to today's episode of Wisdom Talk Radio. This is where we explore the full range of conscious living and how to live an expanded life. Join us to be inspired and encouraged, transformed, and hopefully to tap into a deeper sense of joy and possibility. And speaking of a transformed life, what does science have to say about the whole field of transformation, about the process of transformation? What's the bridge that allows science to inform living consciously? And perhaps for the transformational journey to carry science forward. You will not want to miss this because we're going to talk about all of that. I'm Laurie Seymour, host of Wisdom Talk Radio and CEO and founder of the Baca Institute, home of the quantum connection process. You can go there to discover your unique connection with the essence of who you are by taking the quantum connection quiz. Why do I call it quantum connection? What does that mean? I think of it this way. We're each designed to directly connect with source of everything, the quantum universe, in our own unique way. And knowing that, knowing what our own archetype is, our own style, allows us to open a deeper connection with the universe. And for me, that's the secret to creating the kind of life that you truly want. And I think of it also this way. You are exactly who is needed. For the past 30 plus years, Ravinder Taylor has been researching and analyzing self-help modalities. She has utilized her learning in thousands of interactions with individuals seeking guidance for breaking through blocks to success in their lives. She is the co-author of over 200 personal motivation audio programs and two books, Motivational Nudges to Empower Your Life and Peripheral Perception via Subliminal Stimuli. And this is her new book, Mind Training, The Science of Self-Empowerment. Welcome, Ravinder. I'm delighted to have you here on Wisdom Talk Radio.
Thanks so much, Laurie. That was a lovely introduction. I'm very much looking forward to our interview. And I think we are already very much aligned. You talk about Wisdom Talk Radio. As a child, you know, when you have those fantasies about having that genie that will grant you your wishes. Well, I gave that a great deal of thought when I was young. And, you know, of course, you go through, though, I want to be rich. I want to be successful. I want to be beautiful. And I landed on I wanted to be wise. I decided wisdom was more important because frequently it's not a case of being right. It's about doing what is in the highest best for everyone involved. So wisdom is a great deal more important to me. And then taking conscious control of our lives and choosing the person that we want to be, well, that has been the focus of my research. I've gone down a scientific avenue for that, but it's exactly the same thing.
Yeah. And to me, I love that we can have this kind of conversation because one is not separate from the other. I remember a dear friend of mine who has been involved in this kind of research for decades. And he was involved in the group of us that were doing the research within ourselves. And he's a PhD cellular biologist. He's a research scientist. And he always said, you know, science has not caught up yet to what we already know. And it, because science has to create the means for that. So that's that kind of a piece of the ground for me. You said that you have objections to the self-help field, which is, you know, it's your field. What you have objections to is the use of what you call commonly shared stories that are more myth than fact. So can you talk a little bit about that and explain some of those and why you think that they might do more harm than good?
I am happy to, Laurie. You're correct. My work is all about self-help. I have just gone down the scientific avenue because there can be lots of good tools out there. But when you don't understand the details behind it, then you can miss the most important elements. So when I'm talking about commonly shared myths, the self-help new age industry, they like to latch onto certain ideas and blow them up out of proportion. But as I said, they don't give you the full story. Let me give you an example.
Yes, please.
This may make it a lot easier. There is the story of Roger Bannister. It is shared really commonly. And the way it is normally shared in the self-help new age fields will be that up until this time, people didn't believe that it was possible to run, you know, faster than the 4-minute mile. That was an absolute barrier. They didn't believe it. But then along came Roger Bannister. He believed, and so he did it. And then everyone saw, oh, yes, it was possible. So then they believed, and John Landry, just 6 weeks later, not only ran the 4-minute mile, but he beat Bannister's record by, I don't know, a split second. And so they always go on that all you have to do is believe. Well, stop and think about it, Laurie. What does it mean to believe? How do you believe? Can you just tell yourself to believe something? Does that work? Try it. I believe I can fly. Uh-oh. You know, I'm not going to test that one out. I'm going to go splat. So the details behind the Bannister story, I ran a marathon myself in 2018. Up until I started my training, I hadn't run for decades. Decades, you know. You just, there's things that you just end up not doing. But in, I think it was 2013, a friend of mine said that she was training for a marathon. And because she's a very close friend, and it's like, well, if she can, I can, I'll give it a try. So I started my training in 2013. And I started, you know, with a learn to run a 10K. That was it. I said I hadn't run anything. And when you first start, I mean, my husband and I tried it first of all. Okay, we'll just run down the street. You must be joking. I was so out of breath. But this 10K training entailed, you know, it would begin with you run for 1 minute, you walk for three, you run for one, you walk for three, and then you build it up. And I remember when we reached the 10-minute mark, so you run for 10 minutes, walk for one, run for 10. And at that particular exercise that day was I was going to do 4 sets of 10. I was so proud of myself. So proud of myself. When you start to do long distance running, you get into a flow, and it's a very beautiful spiritual state. Mm-hmm. But it's not that effort that we had had first of all when we just tried to run down the street.
Right.
Now the story with Bannister, I'm trying to remember my dates here. I think he ran the 4-minute mile in 1954, but he started his training in 1946. Training works up in increments. You don't just jump in, or you can end up hurting yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to build it up. So he started in 1946. Now, first of all, of course, he had to believe that he wanted to run. you know, I doubt he started off thinking, you know, his first goal wasn't, I'm going to break the 4-minute mile. Mm-hmm. It was, I'm going to learn how to run. Mm-hmm. And then he pushed himself further and pushed himself further. But it took a great deal of discipline as well. So while his friends are out partying, he had to get an early night because he was up early in order to go train. Mm-hmm. While his friends are indulging in alcohol and foods and fattening foods and all of that kind of stuff, he had to watch his diet. It took a great deal of discipline and a great deal of work. What happens is when you tell people just go believe, they don't think they need to put action behind it.
Well, there's another piece that happens too. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. They don't believe that there's effort. They also get discouraged when, oh, well, it didn't work. I remember a friend of mine who thought, you know, who was wanting money, and all he had to do was put his hand in his pocket and he'd come out and there'd be money there because he believed it. And it's not even, oh, that's crazy. It's what happens when you don't shift your, I think of it this way, is shifting your own frequency. Yes, we've got to have the discipline. Yes, we've got to do the work of whatever that is. And we have to even be available to receive what we might say we're wanting, rather than simply to say, oh, and then it didn't work.
And exactly right. I actually phrased that a little bit differently there. Mm-hmm. Rather than saying you have to be open to receiving. Mm-hmm. So with your friend, he wanted to put his hand in his pocket and pull out the money. Well, that's even directing how it appears. One of the things I look at is luck. Okay. There are people who don't believe that they are lucky. But what happens is because they don't believe they're lucky, when opportunities present themselves, they don't see them. Mm-hmm. It's about seeing the opportunities. If you believe that you're always going to select the wrong kind of partner to go out on a date with, mm-hmm. well, that's all you're going to see. When the good person is right in front of you, you won't see it. So mm-hmm. you create blockages. But from a scientific perspective, mm-hmm. it's not to do with energy. It's just to do with where you put your attention.
And to me, they're the same.
Yeah.
You know, so that is, it is
where
different language, because you're setting up I've done enough research on this to know that when we are judging ourselves, when we're doubting what's going on, when we're mired in self-doubt, the frequency vibrational rate in the cell is lower. When that is elevated, we start seemingly out of nowhere to attract different kinds of things, but we're looking differently. We're seeing differently. We are noticing. And I love that you're talking about the whole idea of opportunity, because actually that's the article I'm working on for the next LinkedIn newsletter to go out, is around opportunities and how we see, we don't always see.
That's true. But the other thing, you know, you can pile onto this as well. That was one of the things I loved about mind training, mm-hmm. was that all of these concepts seemed to add a different element, and it just increases. So you talk about, okay, if I believe that I'm a lucky person, well, then I'm going to be more of an optimist. Optimistic people have been shown to live longer, live healthier. There was the longitudinal nurses study that was done. Mm-hmm. And what they found was the most optimistic women there would have much, much lower risks of dying from different diseases. So they had a 16% lower chance of dying from cancer, a 52% lower chance of dying from an infection. And then it goes, you know, I found it goes even further, because there was research, I think it was out of John Hopkins, I believe. And what they found was that the correlation between positivity and heart disease, even with a family history of heart disease, if you have a positive outlook, you are a third less likely to experience heart disease. These things are significant. So you are creating your reality. You are creating your future. by making some of these changes. And it's very, it can be very, very science-based. You can talk about it energetically. You know, when you're happier, you attract more people to you. You are happier, you're going to be seen more. So you've got a better chance of getting that promotion. So therefore, you've got a better chance of earning more money. When you're happier, the stress hormones aren't raging through your system, doing damage. Mm-hmm. You know, instead, you've got the happy brain chemicals that are supporting you and making your body healthier.
Okay, you just answered what I was going to ask. So, because I'm glad you're detailing that, and it sounds, you make it sound simple, but it's not. I mean, it's. We want to sometimes overlook the things that make sense and go for something magical. Yeah. And yes, if you're happier, if that joy is flowing through you, you're going to create more, you're going to draw more people to you and perhaps those opportunities, and you're going to see them as opportunities instead of seeing them through that lens of, oh, this isn't for me, or though that's not really true, or oh, I'm gonna have to give up something in order to get this. And that's a different way of thinking altogether.
It is indeed. One of the things that part of what prompted me to go the direction I did with mind training is oftentimes the solutions are so simple, it can sound like your parents telling you to eat your vegetables. And people aren't going to respond to that because you're right. They want these magical solutions. But what I show in mind training, by presenting all of the science, I even highlight there the importance of smiling. There's several different bits of research there that I found really interesting. There was two separate research studies that were done. One looked at baseball cards and the other one looked at high school photographs. And looking at those photographs, the researchers were able to predict how long the person would live, because if they just had a small smile on their face, they would live on average 2 years longer than normal. If they had the big Duchenne smile, the Duchenne smile, if you're not aware of it, is the one that reaches all the way up to your eyes when your eyes crinkle up and, you've got that full smile. If they had the full Duchenne smile, they could live up to 7 years longer.
Wow.
But here's another interesting bit that just, caught my fancy, I can say. There was research out of Cardiff University, and they found that when people had Botox treatment to reduce their frown lines, they would be happier. If they had Botox treatment to reduce the smile lines, they were more likely to be depressed. There is a two-way street with all of this. When you're happy, you smile. And that all makes sense. But if you smile, your brain will literally produce the happy brain chemicals, the endorphins. When I first heard that, I thought it was the craziest thing. They were literally talking about you can put a pencil between your teeth and that will encourage your brain to produce the endorphin, which makes you happy and has all these other biological changes in your body as everything else calms down and you feel better. But something so simple as smile, most people are going to disregard that until you start looking at all of this evidence for it.
Wow.
So, I can go a bit overboard with the science, but I try to simplify it. You don't need, to be an expert in neuropsychology or anything. You don't have to do that to learn these processes. I think in order to create the belief, that was why I was presenting all the science behind it, to create that solid belief when you realize how far the effects can go and what you can achieve from that.
Wow. It's wonderful to have you start to detail that out, because the things that we... that we stop ourselves from recognizing could be the greatest gifts. And it's why you talk about optimism. So, I mean, why is optimism so powerful? Even if you're not smiling, why is optimism so powerful?
Because you're not producing the stress chemicals as much. Because when you're optimistic, that is the phase. You may not smile overtly, but mm-hmm. you will carry yourself differently. Mm-hmm. You know, when mm-hmm. you're down and depressed, your shoulders hunch, and you can't help it. Mm-hmm. It just goes that way. Mm-hmm. But when you understand this, for me, you know, if I'm having a bad day for some reason, I'm aware enough of the two-way street to say, okay, I'll change it. So then I become mindful of my posture. I will straighten my shoulders. I will breathe more deeply and more evenly. Mm-hmm. I take actual steps. I may even start to sing to myself, because mm-hmm. even that has been demonstrated to improve your immune, improve your mental health. You know, you just sing. So there's lots of these little things. But when you're aware of it, you can take a bad day and you can say, well, I'm going to do what I can to change it. Instead, what most of us do is I'm having a bad day and they lean into it mm-hmm. and they will tell themselves they're having a bad day and they will indulge themselves because they're having a bad day and they deserve something. So maybe they're going to break their diet and have that chocolate cake. Who knows? they will lean into it. But what I tend to do, I actually do pretty well. See, the other thing too with mind training is these techniques don't take a great deal of time. Mm-hmm. Once you mm-hmm. learn them, once you habituate them, it becomes really easy. Right. So I've got the habit now, especially as it's warming up. I try to go outdoors first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. I like to exercise in the morning. Mm-hmm. Exercising on the treadmill is so boring. But at least I get something, you know.
Well, you're a runner.
You know, I get something out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there are benefits to being on the treadmill, but it doesn't compare to the benefits of being outdoors, getting the sun, which mm-hmm. will produce the serotonin, get some exercise, produces the endorphins. You know, these things all pile on. And then mm-hmm. I add on, you know, what can sound like the spiritual aspects of awe. If you can take mm-hmm. a few seconds, these things don't take a great deal of time.
No.
You can literally step outside and look at something, find something to appreciate.
Yeah.
Our environments are awesome. The clouds are awesome. Mm-hmm. Blue skies are awesome. That little bird singing is awesome. You just take a few seconds to notice that, and it has huge benefits just across the board.
I want to go hook back to something you said a little bit ago about the posture, because I've noticed that I'm thinking about somebody that I was working with who would often just kind of collapse into himself. And one day I was with him one-to-one and came behind and just brought his shoulders back. So he suddenly was standing upright. And then he could breathe differently. And then as I moved in front of him, it's like his whole face had changed. Not because I've worked on changing my thoughts, but I've changed my posture. And what I saw was he felt differently about himself. Whatever he was concerned about suddenly wasn't exactly there and wasn't important. And the ripple effect can start from any place. And I think that's the point that I just want to bring in is
absolutely.
It doesn't have to be, oh, we have to go back in time and figure out where this came from. And that might cement what you're trying to actually change. The going back into.
Yeah. I often talk about, you know, there's two ways to handle personal development. Self-help, personal improvement. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go backwards, and there are times that it can be very beneficial.
Absolutely.
To look at the past to see where certain anxieties come from. What happens with self-sabotage. We all have self-sabotaging tendencies in some area or another. But self-sabotage isn't, you know, your subconscious mind trying to punish you. It's trying to protect you.
Right.
It wants to protect you from repeating a hurt. But it uses information that is old. Mm-hmm. So it has got into the habit of responding a certain way. And it's basing that on information that's not appropriate today. So let me give you an example. I used to have an absolute phobia about public speaking. There was a time, there was no way in the world I would do an interview like this. Absolutely not. I would run the other way. But as I was working through mind training and putting the story together, there's one part of it where I talk about Erikson's 8 stages of development. And what he says there is that each stage of development, you're supposed to learn certain things. He attributes virtues to them. I don't like virtues because it sounds sanctimonious. But there are things that you can learn at different stages of life. Mm-hmm. So they looked at infants. So this was, you know, from birth up to 1.5. And they assessed the degree of bonding that they had with their primary caregiver. And based on the kind of bonding that they had, they were able to predict how many friends they would have in high school or what their romantic relationships would be like. Oof. So there are things in the past that will take you, you know, have an effect on the future. So for me, when it came to public speaking, as I was looking at the 8 stages of development, I looked at one particular stage and said, that's where my insecurities and inadequacies come from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I had this other recollection. And it was a school production, a class production that we were putting on. You know, you mm-hmm. do these events for the parents. And there was one particular production where I think one of the people, the other kids didn't turn up that day. So I had to do double role. So on one hand, I had to clap these coconut shells together to make the sound of horse hooves. So that was my role. I was at like 8 or 9.
Okay? Yeah.
But then I had to do the narration part of it. So, oof. You know, I'm on stage in the evening, all the parents are there, and I had to quickly put down the coconut shells and pick up the piece of paper so that I could read off this particular script. And apparently I looked a bit clumsy and the audience laughed. They weren't being mean. I can look back at it now and say they weren't being mean, but it embarrassed me. You know, I felt awkward. I felt gauche. I didn't feel my best. Mm-hmm. And as I had that memory, once you remember some of these things, they lose their power. Mm-hmm. They lose their power totally.
And that part of you that you spoke about of trying to keep us safe with old information. And yes. Once we realize that the present is not the past, and that in fact, perhaps whatever happened can give you that means to help someone else in that same situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of that building that bridge. But that, now I might delight in public speaking. I might be able to move from the coconuts to yeah. the narration and maybe even have a laugh with it, with the audience.
Yeah, because the fact is we all have these experiences. Mm-hmm. See, that's one of the beautiful parts of getting older, Laurie, mm-hmm. for me, is I realize that we've all made mistakes. All had these embarrassing events.
Yes.
There is, you know, we're all in the same boat together and it's a beautiful boat. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful journey. We keep on learning. We keep on growing. People often say, do I ever wish I was back in my 20s? Mm. And quite honestly, I don't. And we're back to the wisdom. Mm-hmm. We're down to the wisdom part of it. You know, if I could go back to my 20s and know everything I know now, then yeah. Because I would just grow even more. Mm-hmm. But no, I wouldn't want to go back to my 20-year-old self.
Right.
At all. I cherish the wisdom and the experiences that I've had And today, to me, public speaking isn't about performing. It is about sharing all of these things that I have learned in the hopes that it will help somebody else. And that's the best part of my job. I'm sure you have the same thing.
Absolutely.
When you get feedback from clients that tell you how their lives have changed, that makes all the hard work worth it.
It leads me to know that, oh yeah, I know I have more to offer, and there's more that I have to do. And okay, you don't get to leave yet. You don't get to give it all away. And I don't want to give it all away, because this is such a ripe and rich time.
It's a joyful process. Mm-hmm. It can be, when you engage in it properly, it can be an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the more you learn, the more you share that with other people. But then you also learn from them as well.
Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely.
They can often bring up examples, and that can trigger something in me. So,
Okay. I got that now. I know you talk about neuroplasticity, and it's such a compelling thing. It's such a compelling reality that a lot of people don't recognize and don't understand. So I'd love for you to speak to that.
Neuroplasticity is basically your ability to learn. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you're young, it's easy. You know, you will just learn automatically. Everything is really easy. But as you get older, it can become harder and harder. And there is this belief out there that it's harder for older people to learn. But it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm. When you believe that you can't do something, then you stop doing it. It's like the aging process. I don't like people around me who say, well, we're in our 60s now, we need to take it slow. Don't tell me that. My body's going to tell me at the right time if I need to have some self-care, or if I need to push myself and go work out. But what happens just with... It's the same thing with neuroplasticity and your ability to learn new things is the same as like with exercise. I discovered not too long ago, about a year and a half ago, that I had lost flexibility. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You don't pay attention to these things. I was doing I was following a Pilates class on YouTube, and the instructor on that was a young, beautiful woman, you know. But at the very end of it, she just reached up to do a big stretch. And I looked at her, and she looked beautiful. And I looked at the reflection of myself, and I thought, I look like an Oompa Loompa, you know. It just didn't. And so I was trying to think of why. And so I stopped to think about it, and I realized that simply stretching your arms up above your head, how often had I done that in the prior few decades?
Wow.
I hadn't done it. So I had lost flexibility. So to stretch up meant effort. It meant some strain. So there's lots of these areas I have worked to regain my flexibility. So I discovered that I couldn't sit cross-legged on the floor. So then I worked at it, and the ability came back pretty darn quick. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. I couldn't touch my toes. I couldn't come anywhere close to touching my toes, you know. Okay, I'm going to work at this now. You have this idea that I've lost the ability, so it's gone for forever.
Right, right.
And it isn't. And your ability to learn new things. Mind training is all about, you know, neuroplasticity. It encourages it. It teaches your brain to think in different directions, to find different alternatives. I'll tell you some other piece of research that, again,
yes, please.
You know, I am in my 60s, and people, you know, we start to think about, well, what's the future going to hold? And I think one of the biggest fear for people of my generation is possibly dementia. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, that's like, I'm not afraid of dying, but dementia means losing myself and becoming a burden and all of that stuff. And I don't want that. But what they found was there was some research. They often do research on nuns. And it must be because it's easier to track the community. But they did this research on these nuns. And what they found were the nuns who were more engaged, more optimistic, more involved with life, even, you know, if they were dying in their 80s or 90s, when they did the autopsies afterwards, they could find brains that were riddled with Alzheimer's plaque, but they never expressed themselves. They had enough plasticity, enough other directions to go. They were engaged in life.
Wow.
They were creating neurons and these alternative paths.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, perhaps it's harder to learn a language, but if you make the effort to learn a language, that's going to create different connections in your brain. Yeah. Take up music. You don't have to be the best musician, but just the process of making music, you know, trying to hit the keys on a keyboard, all of these things create changes in your brain. So the biggest thing for neuroplasticity is going to be stay engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And if you find an area that is difficult now, don't think that's it. You know, start exercising those particular brain muscles, you know,
mm-hmm.
want to think about it that way. And then just like me with touching my toes, you know, first of all, I could only go halfway down my shins. Now I can go all the way down. And I do this when I sit on the floor. So now I try to see how far down I can go. It's like, can I get my entire palm further than my toes? You know, you just build it up slowly. And it's easy and it's fun, especially when you habituate these techniques into your normal everyday processes.
And not judge yourself for what you can't do. That's the other piece I think is really important. In other words, oh, I can't do this. Oh, I'm, you know, oh, look at what you've done. You've let go of all your flexibility. And I have to do that with speaking French. I'm a longtime French learner and speaker, and I take classes every week, and there's all the things that I forget, and then my teacher will say, you know, will remind me or whatever, say something, and it's like, yes. And yet I can't ever allow that to stop me. It's like, yeah, I've probably forgotten more than I remember, and I'm not going to let that stop me from speaking and expressing myself and, you know, going to France and having a good conversation when I'm there. Or here, you know, wherever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. You just keep working at it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep working at it. If you can make the whole process fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. See, what I find for me is the older I get, there are more things I want to do. There are more things I want to learn. More things I want to try.
Yeah.
I sometimes think, you know, perhaps that's what reincarnation is all about. I believe in reincarnation. You know, it's not so science-based, but who cares?
I'm glad to hear that.
But I often think, you know, perhaps we do that because we find all these things that we want to try again, that we want to do. And yeah, I think the rate I'm going, I'm good for, you know, 100 more lives in order to fit in all the different things that I want to do. But you make it fun. You make it fun. You enjoy it right now. You appreciate what you've got. Be aware that you can always improve yourself. We have a saying around here that is, how high is up? Or how high is your up?
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar with Jonathan Livingston Seagull, Richard Bach's book. It's a great little book. But the how high is your up? Lots of people come or they get interested in self-help because there's a particular something that they want to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
what we find with our company is people come in with one, they fix that, but then it opens up a world of possibilities.
Right.
Well, I can improve this too, and I can improve this too, and I can improve this too. So just like Jonathan Livingston Seagull, don't let the world tell you you have reached the top. Because you can always reach that little bit higher.
Yeah.
You can always... You can stretch yourself. You can taste the chocolate in at these different levels. You know,
I love that so much because it's higher, it's expanding, it's just going for more. It's going for more, and it's not because you're greedy. It's not because just because it's there, but because I think that's part of our inherent nature when we allow it is to know that there's more, and therefore I want more.
This wraps all the way back to your introduction, Laurie, when it's about actualizing ourselves, mm-hmm. actualizing our full selves, mm-hmm. and we don't know. So it's not about wanting more. It's about coming into our own.
Yes.
More and more and more. And achieving our personal best is becoming the person that we choose to be. But so, yeah,
that is unlimited potential. So we don't ever know. There is no top, you know, there is no stopping point. When we're done, we're done. And then we go on, whether that's to the next life or whatever that is. But it's when we can really embrace that, really know that. That's such a marvelous place to be, because it doesn't mean we have to say, oh, well, you're not there yet. Well, of course not. Because as soon as I'm there, wherever that is, there'll be another there.
Beautifully said, Laurie.
Ravindra, I'm so glad that we got to speak today. I want to ask you one more question before we wrap up. Where do you think spiritual practices fit into a science-based self-help program?
They absolutely do. And you will see that in mind training. As I said, it goes from science. It doesn't go directly into spirit. It comes out in all of these other avenues. I talked to you about the benefits of awe, mm-hmm. taking a few moments to experience awe. I have a 12-minute meditation that I totally take apart in mind training. There's so much research about the benefits of meditation that it's not, you know, there's not much point going into all of that and talking about those advantages. But what I did with this particular chapter in mind training is I looked at this particular meditation. We're back to myths again. I looked at some of the explanations. And now this 12-minute meditation has been researched. There's been 7 or 8 different independent research studies done, different investigators, scientists participating in it, all from reputable universities. And they showed that the meditation could improve cognitive abilities, improve emotional well-being, reduce depression, reverse dementia and Alzheimer's to some degree. It was very, very solid. Mm-hmm. But it was based on a spiritual practice. They said it was advertised everywhere as being purely secular. But when I went digging into the background of it all, and it was based on a spiritual practice, but they were attributing the benefits to aspects that I knew to be wrong. I knew categorically, because the spiritual practice that it was drawn from was from the Sikh faith, mm-hmm. and I was brought up a Sikh, mm-hmm. and so I could see this, and it's like, well, they were talking about when you repeat this certain mantra that there are acupressure points in the roof of your mouth as you enunciate each of the syllables. But I knew what the words were supposed to be. And I knew that a Western person trying to say these words isn't going to pronounce it correctly.
Uh-huh.
So when you're talking about acupressure points, well, no, if I say it or you say it, our tongues are going to touch different parts of the inside of it. It didn't hold. Mm-hmm. And then I took the whole thing apart. But then what I did was I put it back together again. Mm-hmm. I showed you why, from a scientific perspective, these different aspects worked. I showed you how to make it your own and how to bring your own faith into it. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to just repeat the mantra as it was said, thinking it was secular or thinking it was the Sikh. You could add your own mantra. So if you're Buddhist, maybe you wanted to use Om Mani Padme Om, you know, just whatever works for you. And when you bring in the spiritual, another analogy that I think holds really well, you know, imagine yourself a child in school. Perhaps you're not feeling very well, your stomach's hurting, whatever. They take you to the nurse. The nurse is very nice, very kindly, you know, has got her arm around you. But it's not going to compare to the feeling you have, the relief you have when mom and dad arrive. Mm-hmm. You know, there is that complete release, that complete opening up. And when your parents get you home, put you on the sofa, put your favorite TV show, you're safe, mm-hmm. you're secure, you have ultimate trust. It's not just that you've been told to trust the teachers and the nurses at school. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you've been told to do. It's something that's internal.
Yes, they're so in your muscles.
When you talk about the spiritual, mm-hmm. you know, if you can bring in your own spiritual, there's so many benefits to spiritual practices. It is so great, Laurie. I found this one interesting too, that the scientific evidence for the health benefits and the emotional benefits that come from religious practices is so great that they have. I heard they were creating secular churches in California. So they're trying to bring in the elements of people getting together, mm-hmm. or people
community,
singing, or people saying positive things, but it's not gonna, you know, it's gonna be good. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have benefits from it. You have the community, you have the rituals, you have that. But without that faith added into it, just like mom and dad mm-hmm. picking you up, you know, mm-hmm. there is that end, that ultimate trust and release that comes.
And I would say that a lot of that has to do with not so much the parents and the trust, although that's part of it, that it's that experience of something larger than yourself, something beyond what we can explain. So that, and that's the challenge for science, is that science always wants to explain and yet doesn't have always the right ways to test things to be able to determine what it is would love to determine. So,
yep, that is, faith has its own element. I think science will continue whittling around the edges, trying to understand why it's so beneficial. You know, they'll get certain parts of it, but it's like love. Mm-hmm. Can you really define what love is? You know, it's...
Well, I'm trying to do that in my new book, but we won't go there right now.
but think about it. Why do you mm-hmm. love your partner? You know, on different days, you can give different answers. Mm-hmm. But there is a whole, there is a gestalt to the whole, to the thing.
Yeah.
And so it is with faith as well. It's just a wholeness that can't really be defined. Mm-hmm. And you,
or I explained.
Think at any point, you just want to enjoy it. And you I take that as a gift, as a gift from the divine.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you again. Can you tell us where people can find you? It'll be in the show notes, but I'd love for you to also speak to that.
Of course, you can visit my website. That is simply ravindertaylor.com. Mm-hmm. I always love hearing back from people who have tried these techniques and, you know, what kind of benefits they have. So if you want to email me, or if you just enjoyed this this podcast. Drop me an email at ravinda@ravindataylor.com. And then you can also find me on Facebook and Instagram. And I love interacting with people there. I love sharing this community right there. And so I would absolutely love to hear from you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you again, Ravinder. You've brought something different to all of us. And I always love that. I appreciate it. And I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me on, Laurie. I enjoyed the conversation too.
Great. And I want to thank our audience for being here with us today. I thank you here each time, because when you come, you know, there is a sense, I'm interacting with the guest, but I always feel the sense of you being out there as well. And I hope that you have received in some way, more wisdom, discovery, illumination. Join us here regularly for that. And if you've enjoyed today, please leave us a review and perhaps even send this on to a friend, somebody that needs to hear this. Forward it on, because then that spreads this kind of discovery. And for more for yourself about discovering more of who you are and your personal quantum connection, go and take that quantum connection quiz right now. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us here at Wisdom Talk Radio. We wish you well in your conscious explorations. For more information and to join in the conversation, our website is wisdomtalkradio.com or at Wisdom Talk Radio on Facebook.